powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
As a reminder, we've got your chance at a $500 Visa gift card coming up in Four Down Territory, which starts at 12:13, just as a heads up for you guys. But before we get to that, continuing our training camp preview. Training camp bump, where did the time go? Next Wednesday, as in this upcoming Wednesday, separate debate, the 28th, practices at 1:30. I believe we're going to be out there. It's like I blinked and all of a sudden it was the end of July.
Yeah,
I don't know how this happened, but I know. Here we are, football season, start of the regular season, officially about 50 days away, less than 2 months away, training camp starting in less than a week. Plenty of questions about this team heading into the year. Obviously, you have Russell Wilson that kickstarted a lot of that with just the question of, is Russell Wilson happy? That's a question that's going to keep following him all year long. Questions about, is Jamal Adams going to get paid? The number one story day one of training camp is going to be, is Jamal Adams here or not? When you go on Twitter, any reporter out there is going to be, is Jamal Adams here or not? That's what he or she is going to be looking for. There are a few questions we have, though, Bump, that won't get answered in training camp, inevitably. You've been a player. You've been covering this team. You know what some of those questions inevitably are that never get answered in camp. So I figured we could start with some that we need answers to.
Okay.
And then veer off into some questions where I'm trying to get people to calm down if we don't get answers to them right away, because we typically don't. So let's start with stuff we are going to need answers to. And I'll get started with, I just want to know who the starters are at corner. I want to know your two starting corners. And I think right now we can kind of, like, maybe not Sharpie, but like a good pen.
A good pen.
In DJ Reed and Akella Witherspoon. But by the end of the preseason, as we're heading into September, I want to feel like they're not going to make a change there.
I don't think they are. Those are the guys.
Yeah.
DJ showed it last year with how he just jumped on the scene and made a bunch of noise. He had the underdog mentality. I think he carries that over to the season. And then Witherspoon, when he was healthy with the 49ers, he was a very good corner. He battled some injuries the past couple of years, and the Hawks have done a good job of finding guys. He found DJ. You signed him when he had like a pec tear or something like that.
Yeah.
You were patient with him, and now he's here. I think they're going to do the same thing with Witherspoon. One guy I don't want people to sleep on, and I know you guys are going to start hating and texting, Trey Flowers, man. Like, this, say what you want about
him.
He
gets an unfair amount of hate.
He does. He gets unfair amount because when a corner messes up, it's just amplified. It's out there in
the
open. You're on SportsCenter, not top 10. But this young man has made some plays as well. If there's going to be a number three corner fighting for that position, I feel okay with Trey Flowers if he has to get in and get some reps.
I still remember after Trey's rookie season thinking, oh, Trey's going to get the first interception of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was that much kind of excitement about what he could potentially do. What about Trey Brown, rookie coming in here competing?
Trey Brown. See, this with the rookies, you have to make noise. Unless you're starting,
You
have to make noise on special teams. And he plays with that fire, with that dog mentality we keep hearing about, to where he's going to make plays on special teams. And if he performs in preseason, he will be in the mix. But it's going to be a marathon for that young man. I don't think they're going to throw him in the fire right now, but he will get reps in preseason. End of the day, we'll see him on special teams for sure.
What's a question that you personally really want to feel like you're leaving training camp? It's the first, second week of September, heading into the regular season, and you think, okay, we got an answer here.
All right, you know, we don't talk about special teams enough. And people need to realize special teams is field position. That 1 year Michael Dickinson had the great season as a rookie, he changed. I mean, we saw him punt the ball from the 20, dropping on the opposite 10. Field position. Who's going to be the leader? Nico Thorpe, I believe, is still a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
He was the leader on that special teams. Who's going to step up? Now I'm going to do what I normally don't do, and I'm going to show a dog, UW, some love. Ben Burkervin, I think, needs to be the guy. Ben Burkervin. He's not a guy you're going to see on first, second, or third down on the field at that linebacker position. He's a little undersized, but he brings a lot to the table as far as his competitiveness and his energy. Those are the type of dudes you need on special teams. So if Nico's not going to be there, Ben Burkervin, step up, lead, take the charge, and show these guys how to get down and hit some dudes.
Can I say, I was on with G and Ursula earlier this afternoon, and we were talking about Rolo, the news coming out of Wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew, who's their producer, said, no matter where you are, if you are in a room with a Coug, you'll know you're in a room with a Coug. Like, you'll be at a funeral. Someone will be like, go Cougs. Very serious moment. We'll not miss an opportunity to be like, yeah, anyways, go Cougs.
Any chance we get.
Yeah, that's exactly right. How about a question that won't be answered? For instance, I think that defense is always an easy place to look. I know that I talked about wanting to know the starters. You can, in general, figure out your first team defense.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, we're there in training camp. We are seeing the first team, second team, third team. They don't mix it up too much. Sometimes they do to get guys different reps. You'll see a day when, you know, oh, this rookie was on second team, and it'll be a story we write about. But for the most part, the guys you see on first team, getting those first team reps, those are your starters. So that's why you're going to have a starting – you're going to have an idea heading out of training camp of, hey, is Daryl Taylor starting at Sam? Or is Cody Barton starting? Is, you know – who are both of your edge rushers? We're going to get all these answers. What I don't think we're going to get, Bump, is an overall idea of where the defense is. It is just impossible with the rules of the offseason and of training camp to figure it out. And the biggest question I have for this defense is whether they can pick up where they left off at the end of last season. I don't think we're going to know until September.
No idea. I mean, you look at practice in the NFL, it's a lot of running around. Everyone looks fast. Everybody looks good on defense, especially.
Every receiver looks like Jerry Rice.
Every receiver. It's so hard to evaluate guys during training camp because you don't get to hit anymore, which is good in the long run. But in the short term, it puts these coaches in tough positions for evaluation purposes. But we'll have an idea who's going to start. But, right, how are they going to look? You know, are they going to be able to, you know, bring the intensity that we saw last year? What's Daryl Taylor going to look like at his new position? Is Jordan Brooks going to be able to handle getting 60 to 70 snaps per game? And last year, I believe he played like 28 to 30% of the plays. Those are questions that aren't answered until September. Even in preseason, those guys aren't going to play like 10, 15 snaps. We're not going to see them out there going. So you have to be patient. And then, let me warn people, that offense is going to look so good during training camp. It's going to look so good. It's people true. Are going to be so excited.
I love an offensive player saying this, too, because normally they'd be like, yeah, you know, it's really exciting. And you'd have a defensive player like, it's all lies.
It is. Because
we can't hit you.
You can't hit. Every run's going to go for 15 yards. Every catch is going to be made.
Yeah.
So the offense will look good, but simmer down.
Like I said, there will be a 6'5" receiver that will be leading a conversation about whether he could make the roster as a surprise.
Yeah. Ferguson?
Jazz Ferguson. Who is Jazz Ferguson this year? There will be a receiver because everyone's going to get their shot to look great with the offense, especially the receivers. They mix in a ton with first team reps. So if you're like an undrafted rookie, you might still get a chance to get out there and you know, catch a couple passes, maybe, from Russ.
Yeah, those rookies, man, you got to depend on preseason. That was me. I was at practice, man. I got like 4 snaps of practice. I'm sitting there. I'm like, all right, I just got to get ready for preseason. So preseason with the younger guys.
Yeah.
And even if then, we've seen John Ursua have a good preseason, and we haven't seen him since. So there's so many things that go on during the training camp as far as eval. Do you know the playbook? Are you getting to your spots, alignment, assignment, execution? So it's going to look nice. Let's have fun, though. Let's enjoy it.
It is really fun. And I think, again, this is why I think it's important to go over, like, look, here's what we're looking for. Answers. And this would be another thing that we can get an answer to. Health. Hey, is Marquise Blair out there practicing? Is Daryl Taylor practicing? Daryl Taylor was at rookie camp, so I think we're all assuming the answer is going to be yes. But players that missed time last year, how do they look? You aren't going to know if they're going to be at their best. But that's why it seems like just basic information. But when guys are there and they're talking about this person's healthy, this person's practicing, that's news. That's news you can take from camp. Those are things that you do learn in August.
What about Aldon Smith? What's going on there, man?
I
mean, I would love to see him out there. But, again, you never know. Pete Carroll said he wasn't healthy enough to participate in mini camp. So he's out there training on his own. He's in the area. He's around.
Yeah.
But these coaches they're not transparent, and they don't have to be transparent with us. Let us guess and let us speculate. We'll keep it interesting for you guys.
Well, and if Pete Carroll says in OTAs, you know, Aldon Smith implying he wasn't like in shape enough to practice with the team, you know what I hope changed in a couple weeks? That he got in shape enough to practice with the team. If I'm Aldon Smith, that's what I'm hearing. And I'm like, I better make sure I'm there with the team. What's another thing where you think, hey, guys, calm down, simmer down. We're not going to have an answer about this in August.
I would say how the offensive line is going to look. Are they going to be able to protect? Because, again, during training camp, you're going to see blitzes by the defense. You're going to have the offensive line pick guys up. And let me give you guys an insight. When it is offensive emphasis during training camp, the offense is supposed to win, and the scout defense is told, look, let these guys win. You get in position, but end of the day, 50-50 chance, you let the offense win. So we're going to see Gabe Jackson pick up a blitz. We're going to see Damian Lewis look good. We're going to see the OG Dwayne Brown handle the edge rusher, as they should. But there's no pads on, and this defense is being coached to let these guys win. So the offensive line, are they going to be able to protect Russell Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
Is Russell Wilson going to get the football off early and help them protect? Those are questions that I think we need answers to as well.
Now, I have a genuine question that's stemming from this conversation. I didn't warn you about it. I was thinking yesterday some of my own big questions heading into camp, and one of them is obviously, what is Shane Waldron's offense going to look like? Mm-hmm. Now, Bump, what would you expect? How much of the playbook would you expect a new offensive coordinator to actually showcase in camp?
It's contingent on what these guys have learned during the offseason and how much they can handle. I would say he goes in thinking, okay, we need to have 60% of our playbook installed by the first preseason game. And then it's just constant adjusting. Can we handle this? Can we add three more concepts off of this look? Of course, by the start of the season, you want all of your stuff in. You want your foundation in. So I guarantee you Shane Waldron has a book of foundation plays. Maybe it's 30 plays. But then after they learn that, every week he's tweaking this play. He's tweaking that play. By the end of the year, there are going to be 45 to 50, 60 concepts out there. You never know. It all depends on what these guys can handle. With a veteran offense, with Russell Wilson and the guys on offensive line, the receivers, you would think that he would have most of his offense installed by the time the season starts.
Now, what's another position battle, for instance, that you think we're going to have a pretty good idea of what this depth looks like in camp?
I want to see who the legit number two running back is going
to
be. It's a big year for Rashad Penny. Right? This is last year on his rookie contract. He hasn't been healthy. He's got to show that he can go. You got DJ Dallas, who played last year, had an opportunity to make some noise. He's a different kind of back, more of your outside runner. He can catch the football as well. Who's going to hold down the number two spot? We know 32 is going to be there. This is a big year for Rashad. I hope he figures it out because he's had a lot of pressure on him. First round pick. Everyone's like, who the heck is this guy? We could have gotten another guy. I'm not even going to say his name. But yeah, Rashad
Penny. Better that you don't.
Who's going to be number two?
We're all talking about Nick Chubb. We already know. You don't need to text then. No, Rashad Penny is an interesting one because I think that there are so many fans that are kind of spurned by that they're like, hate that a first-round pick was used on someone who didn't end up being a 1,000-yard running back. Yeah. If you're going to get a running back, it better be a guy that's your starter, that's competing for time, that's making you a great run-first offense, let's say. And Chris Carson, your seventh-round pick, ends up being that guy. Chris Carson's fantastic. I am fine with Chris Carson being that guy because it's not a lack of competition that makes him special. He's a special player.
Yeah.
That said, for a new play caller, a rookie play caller coming in, and for a team where Chris Carson's like he's a downhill, he's a powerful runner, he might get hurt and miss a game or two. Who do you have behind him? Like, that's why it's such an important conversation too, is it's not just that you want running back depth in general. It's you want running back depth when you have Chris Carson as your starter and when you have a brand new offensive coordinator that needs a security blanket.
Yeah, the run makes everything right. And when in the Shane Waldron offense, they're going to rely on the zone concept. So zone, for you guys listening, just means that there's combo blocks on the line, offensive line, work up to the linebacker. They don't necessarily have a guy. They have a guy who's in their area. And you need a running back who can make the play caller right even when he's wrong, who can make the offensive line right even when they get beat. And Chris Carson is that guy. I think last year it was a beautiful thing to have Carlos Hyde back there. He might not have blown the top off and had all these extraordinary runs, but his running style was downhill. That's the type of back you need back there to back up Chris Carson. Can Rashad Penny do it?
Right. All right. So those are some of our questions that will or won't be answered in training camp. So just as a reminder for everyone, there is a lot we're going to learn about this team. A lot we're going to learn, but there are a few questions we won't find out until September, October, so do not panic as we enter the season. It is 12:13. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
All right, first down, Michael Bumpus filling in for Jake Heaps today. You said you think people need to proceed with caution when it comes to Shane Waldron's offense. Why?
Proceed with caution because it is a new offense. There are going to be some bumps in the road. Yes, Russell Wilson is a smart guy. I believe he has the playbook down, but it takes 11 moving pieces, all moving at the right direction at the right time. There are going to be hiccups. Even in an offense that Russell knew for 3 years, you still had hiccups. They came out hot. Defenses adjust. As soon as you put your offense on film, coordinators are licking their chops, rubbing their hands, saying, okay, now we know what they like to do. This is how we're going to counter. How is Shane going to counter? First time being a play caller, he's learning as well. So they're going to have success. I think they're going to figure out. They have the personnel to get it done. But this is the NFL. There are smart coordinators on the other side of the football as well.
All right, second down. To me, I'll say this one. So I was wondering which names are going to be overlooked in training camp that you think you should be keeping an eye on. And Bump, you can chime in with me here if there's one you have in mind. The first thing that came to mind for me was Alton Robinson.
Yeah,
I think that he's a guy that when we talked to Jim Nagy, who's the director of the Senior Bowl, a former SEC scout, former Seahawks scout, he was so high on Alton Robinson, called him the steal of the draft. Pete Carroll said he was a steal of the draft. And I am hoping that for Alton Robinson, what you have is a penned-in starter with a guy like Carlos Dunlap and even Benson Mayowa being a backup. And then you have a guy with such huge upside and such a great ceiling that can keep those guys fresh as part of a healthy rotation. That's what I want. Like, I am far more excited about Carlos Dunlap's potential as a 32-year-old, and Dunlap's fantastic, if he's got a guy like Alton Robinson who's there and healthy as well to give him a break sometime. So I think Alton Robinson, his development is so, so huge in training camp. What about you? Is there kind of a guy you have your eye on?
Yeah, I'm looking at Forsythe, man. He's not going to be asked to play right now, but Dwayne Brown is 36, 37 years old. He's going to need a break. We've seen with this offensive line, unfortunately, knock on wood, there's always some type of injury problem throughout the year, so guys are going to have to be moved around. We saw Damian Lewis play center for a game. He's a natural guard. Now he's on the left side. We got Gabe Jackson on the right side. Where does Forsythe fit in this situation? We're going to see him on the field. He's got to be ready to go.
I think I'm also curious to watch some of those little extra nuggets of information we get at training camp. Is Dwayne Brown working one-on-one with Forsythe? You know what I mean? Does it look a little bit like there's a passing of the torch here at left tackle? All right, third down. Bump, fans are going to be back in the stands this season for the NFL. Are we going to see an effect on the field because of that?
I think we are. We were there last year, and it was quiet.
It was weird.
I met Dwayne Eskridge this past weekend, and he described it as, look, those were the greatest scrimmages known to man out there in the NFL because there were no crowd. There wasn't a crowd out there. You didn't feel the energy. I could literally hear Russell Wilson celebrating after a touchdown. And without the fans, you lose your home field advantage. You know, I could hear the other team barking on the sideline. I don't know the stat, but I like to say we didn't get as many false starts as we usually get. Home field advantage is real. And without the 12s there, it was different. So them coming back this year, it will get these guys amped up, get them going. And these rookies from last year will get to experience the 12s for the first time. So that's going to get them going too.
Now, one of my favorite things from last year that we won't get anymore was still that kind of way for players to curate artificial excitement. Like at the games, on the sideline, in big moments, you would still see players like jumping up and down, raising their arms in the air as though they're trying to get the fans excited. And you're like, you know what? If it does it for you, like you got to think you're in the moment. But there were so many moments just watching from the press box where you aren't getting the full sound of anything, but you can feel the press box move when there are cheers. When I thought, you know, Dunlap sacking Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
That was a moment the crowd would have been going wild over. And I was just kind of bummed that people weren't there. Like, there's part of it, even as a viewer or someone covering it, that's missing, that you miss, and just kind of like the flavor of what an NFL game is.
So many moments. What, the stop, goal line stop against New England.
That, exactly.
The drive against Minnesota. Yes.
The Chris Carson's touchdown against Minnesota, too.
Yes.
The rundown from the backside of the formation by Jamal Adams against the Rams to stop him. Like, there were so many moments where you look up and you're just waiting for the 12s to go crazy, and they're just not there.
How about this? Jamal Adams entering the field for the first time as a Seahawk.
He's never played in front of the 12s.
He's never played in front of Seahawks fans ever. And finally, they'll be able to get those moments. Yep. Fourth down. All right. Now, this is something that came up during our conversation about Jamal Adams. I saw it on the text line, so I'm bringing it in here. Both of us can answer. I'll start with this one. Are we okay with Jamal Adams not practicing? Bump, we were talking about this during the break. I am always okay, always okay without fail with a player not practicing when he does not have a deal. Jamal Adams is a rare talent at safety. I don't care what you have to say about his coverage grade. This guy can do things as a defensive player that a lot of guys cannot do. He is a phenom on the field. He has about $9 million guaranteed to him for the rest of his career as a player. The rest of his career, he's got $9 million, and he's worth so much more. His job, the way he does it, is worth twice that per year. Why would he risk going out and in a freak accident, I know it's unlikely, but in a freak accident, blowing out his knee, and he misses out on millions and millions and millions of dollars of guaranteed money?
Jamal, if you do not have a contract, don't do it.
Don't do it.
And I assume the Hawks would understand, too. You know what? He's going to be at practice. He's going to be wearing a bucket hat. He's going to have a towel over his neck. He's going to be sitting there coaching. He's not going to be practicing. And what people forget is this is a business.
Yeah.
They will cut you. As soon as you cannot do what they want you to do at a high level, they will cut you. So as a player, you have to protect yourself, protect your body. That's what makes you your money. As long as communication is going well and everyone respects each other, I think both sides are good with him sitting out.
This is the thing I think some people don't understand. Not the majority of people. The majority of people that I see are completely supportive of players for the most part. I think what some people don't understand is these tenets we have about team sports, selflessness, sacrifice, don't always apply fully in professional sports. Like you said, it's a business. The team is team first.
Yep.
They aren't thinking about anyone else. They are team first and not player first. And if that player gets injured, sorry, if we're going to save money, we're going to cut you. If we're going to save money, we're not going to give you this huge deal. And so it's in the best interest of players to protect themselves. And I think that we're kind of coached to think that none of this applies to team sports, particularly football. It doesn't make you a bad teammate or a bad person for treating your job like a job sometimes, even if it's professional football. I don't think it's a slight in any way. I think I understand the love fans have of their team and the dedication they have, but when you have an opportunity to get paid generational wealth, money that will set you and your family up for generations, you don't skip out on it just because you might make people mad or upset.
And situations are different. Shoot. You put me or Jake Heaps in that situation, I bet you we're practicing no matter what because we're trying to make a squad. You know what I mean? Jamal Adams, he's like, I'm good. I'm one of the best in the game. I have a little bit more leverage than the undrafted free agent dude. So there's levels to this. Everyone
is
not.
Yeah, there's not a
not, universal. No, it's not. Everyone's not treated equally in the NFL.
No, there's a practice squad player that's like, I don't need an Achilles. I don't need both of these. I'm fine. I'll go
take
out here
up.
And try it. All right, that was Four Down Territory brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. And you guys, we've got a chance for you to win a $500 Visa gift card. Here's how it works. You are going to listen to this code word. You are going to enter it at a website. Today's Genuine Auto Glass code word is Auburn, as in the city of Auburn, A-U-B-U-R-N, Auburn. You can enter that code word at 710sports.com/win. Do not text it in. If you want to text it in, you can. That's fine. I love it when you guys text, but that's not how you enter the contest. You can't win that way. I'm telling you. Help me help you. Enter the code word Auburn at 710sports.com/win for your chance at a $500 Visa gift card courtesy of Genuine Auto Glass. Thanks to the guys over there. We're trying to get you guys set up for the weekend. Coming up next in the timeline, Texas and Oklahoma reportedly can move to the SEC. What's it mean for the Pac-12? Coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jake out on paternity leave. Congratulations to the Heaps fam for baby River, born this morning. Looking beautiful. In his place, we have Michael Bumpus. Bump, you are a Pac-12 alum. I am a Pac-12 alum. Curtis is a Pac-12 alum. Three different schools represented here. Go Dawgs.
Go Cougs. And,
bear down.
And there could be news. There could be news that affects our conference here. It doesn't start with our conference, though. It starts with this news. If you see Texas trending, if you see Oklahoma trending on your timeline or SEC trending, well, it's because all these things are related. Texas and Oklahoma reportedly could move to the SEC within weeks. That's according to ESPN. Now, why is this important for the Pac-12? Because it means that some other schools from that conference could be looking to join the Pac-12. Curtis, there have been more developments since then. So this is a tweet from a TCU insider that writes
for 24/7 Sports.
For 24/7 Sports. So So this is just, again, it's all rumors that are floating around. But this 24/7 Sports insider says that TCU, Baylor, and Texas Tech have reached out to the Pac-12. We don't know. Right now, almost everything around the Pac-12 is speculation. Every single thing that you're seeing around schools wanting to join the Pac-12 is speculation. Take it with a grain of salt. You're going to be seeing a lot of it over the next couple weeks as we see the fallout of Texas and Oklahoma potentially joining the SEC. Now, you guys, let's talk about whether or not we'd want this to happen, because that's what Pac-12 fans care about.
Yeah.
Would you want other schools to join the Pac-12? Are there schools you have in mind that should join the Pac-12?
My pride tells me, no, we don't need anybody. Pac-12, we're good to go. But let's be real.
Let's be real.
This is not the 2000s, early 2000s, all the way to 2007, where USC is dominating. Oregon is still a presence. UW is going to be ranked top 25 every year. But we're missing some firepower.
And it's gone. The genes are higher and the teams are worse. That's what's changed since the early 2000s.
Oh, no.
Higher and tighter. We need somebody to help with the perception of the Pac-12. Like, we're losing guys. Like, we've had two of the best recruits in the state of Washington the past 2 years leave. Mm-hmm. Leave the West Coast, go to the Midwest, right? Ohio State, that's G Scott's son, and then JT, another kid who's the number one recruit in all the land, and he goes to the Midwest, to Ohio State. We just need more firepower here. And who would I want here? The thing is, I want to keep it West. I'm a West Coast guy from California. Like, I always want to keep it West. So I'm like, man, forget the Texas schools and everybody on that side. But at some point, you just got to fold and say, look, what can they do to help this conference? And I think you bring in a team. During the break, Curtis mentioned BYU. I think they should be number one. BYU should be number one to be brought in if they want to come in. And then I think you guys mentioned TCU as well. Mm-hmm. Whoever. Just come help this conference out.
Well, and there's a hesitancy from the Pac-12, I think, to add – religious institutions, whether it be BYU, or there's been rumors in the past of adding Gonzaga just as a basketball-only member, them being a Jesuit school out in Spokane. And I think it's high time for the Pac-12 to kind of get over themselves when it comes to, like, being exclusive to research institutions.
Or, like, academic. You mentioned this idea that, like, oh, we don't want schools with questionable academics.
Yeah, because they don't want to add Boise State or, like, San Diego State.
I mean, you have ASU here already.
Exactly, yeah. They've got, like, 100,000 students worldwide. Like, anybody can get an ASU. You got a pulse? Welcome. You're a Sun Devil. Shout out Paul Moyer.
Moyer.
We'll always take
But, shots. Like, look, you're the Pac-12. You don't really have a leg to stand on right now in terms of, you know, excluding schools. You don't want to get passed up like the Big 12 has, that now all these conferences are picking apart that conference.
Yeah.
You run that risk. That's what happened to the Big East a couple of years ago, where the ACC and the SEC were taking teams, and the Big 10, they were just taking whatever was left of that carcass. You don't want to be in that same spot that we're seeing right now with the Big 12 and the Pac and the Pac-12. Geographically would be tough for, you know, schools like the SEC and the Big Ten to take from, but, like, what if USC wants to choose to go to the independent route? Like,
that's always an option. I'm worried about USC leaving. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about that, I started getting worried about and panicking with abandonment issues, but also with the fear that the Pac-12 is already struggling.
I mean, it makes sense that SC would want to go. SC is a national brand. Everyone knows who USC is, and honestly, they might be better off going the independent route.
Probably. But I sure hope they don't. And I feel for the new Pac-12 commissioner inheriting a lot of this. But here's the thing. With this opportunity, with the chance that USC goes independent, with the chance that, I don't even know, the SEC grows and the Pac-12 falls even further behind, there's also opportunity. There's opportunity for those new media deals. There's opportunity to take in other schools. There's all kinds of opportunity to grow the Pac-12, literally, but also with their own success with their program. So hopefully that's the direction that it's moving in. So next story here on the timeline, if you are seeing Kevin Durant trending, well, the entire Team USA delegation at the Olympics saying happy birthday to Kevin Durant before the Olympic opening ceremony. Take a listen. Cut number three right here.
Gesture.
Oh, so nice. so touching, very sweet. Everyone loves it. Here's the problem. It's not Kevin Durant's birthday. It's not even close. His birthday is September 29th.
So this was just like that
this
joke at Red Robin where you just sit down and send people over.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. This is you, and Curtis mentioned this, this is you wanting to embarrass your friend at the restaurant by telling the restaurant it's his birthday.
And getting a free Sunday out of the deal.
Now, here's my question for you guys. Have you ever had a prank pulled on you where no one else was maybe in on it, but your friend is just looking at you like, yeah, that's right.
I've had the birthday thing pulled on me.
The birthday thing, yeah.
Several times.
Yeah.
Every time we go, there's a spot, Wingers, back in the Palouse that we go to. Actually, I'll be there this weekend for the Coug Alumni Tournament. Someone pulls a happy birthday deal all the time.
Aztec is a good place to do that because they put a sombrero on whoever it is that's celebrating a birthday. I pulled that one on my buddy Henry in high school, and his face was beet red. It was not his birthday.
Here's the unspoken rule with it. You cannot tell the people singing to you that it's not your birthday because it's rude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're depending on your friend having social niceties and being a polite person and just being squeamish through this moment of awkwardness. So, from the Jake and Stacey show, happy birthday to Kevin Durant. Wishing the best for you. That's really cool. Next story here. If you're seeing Hector Santiago trending, it's not just because of his suspension, which is now a couple days old. He's pretty well into that. No, it's because he recently pitched a simulated game, pause for effect, against high schoolers. Now, I feel like I don't understand this, Curtis. Am I to believe, I can't be reading this right. There has to be something I'm not understanding.
No, he pitched against a high school team.
He pitched against a high school team. I'm imagining a professional 30-something-year-old pitcher just throwing as hard as he can against a 14-year-old.
How much fun would that be to like go back and play, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds when you have been in the major leagues for a decade?
Bump, it would be like you playing high schoolers.
Bump, how many yards receiving do you think you could get in a high school game right now?
Right now?
Over 200?
No, you'd get a scholarship yesterday. No, no, this is football. Have you seen these high school kids? This ain't baseball where I'm standing there and I'm swinging, I'm throwing. No, this is football. I'm good for 10 plays right now. It'll be good 10 plays. I might go up top and score a touchdown, but these high schools are on a different level. Baseball's different. Have you guys seen that commercial with Aaron Judge and I forgot who the other guy was, and they pretty much said, you know, this is how I get ready for the league. I go and I play against little kids. That's what this reminds me of. He went down and just dominated these dudes, and I hope this let these kids know this is how hard it is to make it to the show. This is what you're going to see if you have an opportunity to get to the main.
Now, I think you're thinking of some of the best high schools. I'm thinking of like my old high school where football players, like a starting quarterback is like 5'5". And like 120 pounds.
Well, like, my high school was pretty good and still is. So I look at them, I'm like, nah, those boys are ready.
Fair. All right. Time for the IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Got some Mariners injury updates. These are straight from Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer, her Twitter account at Shannon Dreyer. First baseman Evan White underwent hip surgery. He'll rehab in Arizona. Meanwhile, reliever Casey Sadler is set to return any day now. Good news for the bullpen. And center fielder Kyle Lewis, I know this is the one you guys are all curious about. He's beginning some light T work. He is not running yet, though, but slowly working his way back. We'll see if he makes it back at the end of this year. All right, don't go anywhere. Hype train coming your way next. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jake out today, Bump filling in for him, and it is time to head down to the station for Hype Train. So we will get this started in the NBA. Now, normally we do Hype Train on Wednesday. Didn't have a show, so carrying it out. So this is NBA Finals themed, even though we already know the winner. And the winner, Giannis and the Bucks. Here is the Hype Train. You board it if you agree with the statement. Let it pass on by if you don't.
Boom.
Giannis is the new face of the NBA. Bump.
I'm letting that pass. I don't think he is the new face of the NBA. I think he's now one of the top five faces of the NBA. But I think you still got to go to LeBron. I mean, LeBron, KD, these established veterans who are more than just basketball players. I think Giannis is the most endeared player in the league right now.
He's like, so easy to like.
His personality. I mean, he talks and acts like he's experienced everything for the first time.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate about him. I think another solid year, he might be the face. But these old guys have to kind of get pushed out the league first before Giannis takes over. So I'm going to let that pass.
Curtis, Giannis is the new face of the NBA. Bump not boarding, are you?
I mean, when you drop 50 in a series clincher like that, a finals clincher.
Woo.
So maybe for now,
and
maybe
then you
that's
back
yours.
It up. by going to Chick-fil-A right after
Let's
and
go.
Ordering a 50-piece nugget. I'm saying Giannis is the face of the league, and I'm saying the NBA is in a real good spot with Giannis as the face of the entire association. I get that LeBron is still the most popular guy outside of basketball. Like, he's the most popular guy that casual non-sports fans know of. But I think Giannis is about to take off here. He's about to enter into another stratosphere. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying he is now the face of the NBA.
All right, I got another one here for you guys. That train leaving. Another one coming into the station. Going to the Seahawks for this one. This is the hype train. If you're buying in, you're bored in. Jamal Adams will have a new deal by the start of training camp. That means that by next Wednesday, July 28th, Jamal Adams has a deal done.
Letting it ride. I don't think it's going to get done yet.
Ah.
I think there's so many specifics and conversations that need to be had that don't have to be rushed. I think no one's in a rush. I think that Jamal's like, look, we can get this thing done. Let's take our time. I don't need a practice. I'm in shape. I'm good to go. The Hawks are like, yeah, I think you'll be fine. Let's take our time and make sure both sides are happy. July 28th is when it starts. Like I said before, Jamal will be there in a bucket hat with tennis shoes on, just coaching.
Bucket
in the
hats
hoodie,
back.
In the hoodie, you know, sweatpants.
Yeah. I had a dream I had a bucket hat.
Really?
I don't know why I said that. That's a real thing, though. I had a
that
dream
was
I had a bucket
hat. The entirety of your dream, just you sitting.
You know, when you have dumb dreams and you're like, yeah, I had a dream that we got into a boat and crossed a lake, and that was it. That was the entire dream. I slept for 9 hours. That was my dream. You know? I had a dream I got breadsticks. Jamal Adams will have a new deal by the start of training camp. July 28th.
I am with Bump. I'm going to let this train go by.
All
I
right.
think Jamal Adams' agent is somebody that likes to go deep into training camp before getting stuff done. I don't see a deal getting done. Stacey, what do you think?
We're unanimous.
You can't just skirt by.
I know.
You can't just
five here, yeah. So I'm choosing to skip one or two of them. I am unanimous. We are unanimous on this one. I don't think a deal gets done. I'm actually not even convinced a deal gets done in the first week. I think there's fear that it could go into September, although I think it's really important he get on the field. The Seahawks know that he's not going to get on the field and be practicing without a deal. And if you want to head into the season, pick up where you left off on defense, you need to get it done. So I think, I don't know, I guess mid-August seems like a fair time. He's going to be, I think, pushing for as close as he can get to 18.
Yeah.
Might take some more weeks of negotiation for that. Next up. All right. Here we go. We're talking Mariners. We're talking the homestand they have. Now, they dropped the first game of a series against the A's, but they have four. So they have three more games here, still a chance to win the series, and then a three-game series against the Astros immediately following that. This is the hype train. Tell me if your boarding bump will start with you. The Mariners will finish their homestand with a winning record.
I'm boarding it. I'm getting
there
on that
go.
Train. I believe it's just something about this team. I don't think they're going to win the wild card spot. I don't think they're going to be legit contenders for a couple of years. Maybe not even be contenders then. But right now, living in this moment, I'm feeling their vibe right now. And I think they're going to get this thing done.
Man, Kikuchi on the mound tonight with a huge opportunity to right the ship. Does he do it? I think tonight tells a big story as to how this homestand is going to go, because you don't want to get off to an 0-2 start against the A's, because then the best you can do is split that. I think you say gets it done tonight. I think the Mariners win, and I think they do finish with a winning record on this homestand. I don't think it's going to be like 6-1 or anything, but I think 4-3 is within reach. I think they finish with a winning homestand.
I think 4-3 is within reach, but I'm not boarding. I think that there is a chance they could get swept by Houston. They're offense, their lineup has been so stellar. As a team, they've been stellar. I mean, it is looking like it is still possible you get like Astros Dodgers in the World Series.
Yeah.
Like, that is a possibility for real this year. And so I would love to be wrong about this. I'm praying I'm wrong. Call me out if I'm wrong. I don't care. I'm not boarding it. I'm not going with a winning record for this homestand. Next train. How about this one? We're switching to the Pac-12 for the last hype train here. The Pac-12 will increase their geographic footprint within the next 3 years. Bump.
Next three. Yes.
So I'll say by 2024.
Yeah, next three. Yeah, if they don't, everyone's fired. Start all over. Everyone's fired.
Just break it all down. We're starting with Pac-1, and you earn your way in.
We're going to have a play-in to get into the Pac-12 conference. They got to do something. Again, if they don't, then what are they looking at? Swallow your pride. At some point, you got to realize your product just isn't – people aren't buying it right now. Recruits aren't going there. I know Oregon has a top 10 recruiting class, I believe, but look at all the extra stuff that they do. They – you know what? Who said it best? This morning, Danny said, Pac-12 has got to start cheating again.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because the SEC cheats. They cheat. Everyone else cheats. I know you don't want to hear this as an amateur sport. Not anymore. I guess guys are getting paid. But you got to switch it up, Pac-12. You don't do it in 3 years, and everyone's fired. But I think they are smart enough to do something different.
And cheat successfully. You know what I mean? Don't be working these side deals with Aunt What's-Her-Face from Full House to get some kid into school on a fake sailing scholarship. No, cheat for, like, football and hoops and stuff that's going to get us
kids. Tosh Luplays.
That's what I'm saying.
Here.
Like, yeah. do some good, high elite-level cheating.
Elite cheaters. I like it.
Yeah. All right. I think the Pac-12 also increases their footprint within the next 3 years. And I think they're going to have to swallow their pride and say, you know what? We can't be so exclusionary as to who we let into this conference. There are some big, big names out there that they would have an opportunity to go get. Big names in the footprint that already exists that they can go get. I think it's time they start knocking on those doors.
Yeah, I think especially if they potentially lose USC, then you have to drop some of those quote standards you might have and go after a BYU, go after a Boise State. Figure something out where you're remaining competitive or you risk losing other people. All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Coming up next, our most important Seahawks countdown continues. Number 9. Don't go anywhere.